Comes from the book of Acts. I'll be reading chapter 1, and I'm only going to read 6 through 11. I think it lists a little bit longer reading in the bulletin. So when they had come together, they asked him, "Lord, is this the time when you will restore the kingdom to Israel?" And he replied, "It is not for you to know the time or the period that the Father has set by his own authority. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all of Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." When he had said this, as they were watching, he lifted up and a cloud took him out of their sight. While he was going and they were gazing up towards heaven, suddenly two men in white robes stood by them. And they said, "Men of Galilee, why do you stand looking up into the heavens? Then Jesus who had been taken up, this Jesus who had been taken up from you into heaven will come in the same way as you saw him go into heaven." May we add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. C.H. Spurgeon. Spurgeon lived in the mid-1800s, and he was a slightly buck-toothed, heavy-set man who could just preach up a storm. His sermons are still appreciated some hundreds of years later. I'd like to share with you a very brief excerpt from the beginning of a sermon he delivered entitled "The Education of Sons of God." Now, if you listen closely, maybe not even that closely, you may hear the echoes of a poem that I suspect that we're all familiar with. Were you ever in a new trouble? One which was so strange that you felt that a similar trial had never happened to you. And moreover, you dreamt that such a temptation had never assailed anybody else. And did you ever walk out upon that lonely desert island upon which you were wrecked and say, "I am alone, alone, alone. Nobody was ever here before me"? And did you suddenly pull up short as you noticed in the sand the footprints of a man? I remember right well passing through that experience, and when I looked low, it was not merely the footprints of a man that I saw, but I thought I knew whose feet had left those imprints. There were the marks of one who had been crucified, for there was the prints of the nails. "My object in this discourse," he says, "will be to try to point out the footprints of Jesus in the sands of sorrow." Well, while most of you probably weren't familiar with either that sermon or its author, most of you probably are familiar with the poem that that sermon might remind you of. There's actually much speculation that it was this sermon that inspired the poem. The poem, of course, is "Footprints in the Sand." It's a short poem, so for those of you who maybe somehow haven't read it recently or haven't read it at all in your life, let me very briefly read it for you. "Footprints in the Sand" by Mary Stevenson. "One night I dreamed I was walking along the beach with the Lord. Many scenes from my lifetime flashed across the sky. In each scene I noticed footprints in the sand. Sometimes there were two sets of footprints. Other times there was one set of footprints. Now this bothered me because I noticed that during the low periods of life, when I suffered from anguish, sorrow, or defeat, I could see only one set of footprints. So I said to the Lord, 'You promised me, Lord, that if I followed you, you would walk with me always. But I've noticed that during the most trying periods of my life, there have only been one set of footprints in the sand. Why then, when I needed you most, you have not been there for me?' And the Lord replied, 'The times when you have seen only one set of footprints in the sand is when I carried you.'" I still remember the first time I read that poem. I was in high school. I was given a pocket calendar with a beautiful picture of the beach on the front of it. Half the picture was the ocean. And right where it sort of thinned out into that foamy white residue, the shoreline took over with with sparkling tan bits of sand accented by this unnaturally white and unnaturally whole sand dollar. And then printed over top of it all was the poem, Footprints in the Sand. Now, before I go any further, let me just say that for a high schooler who grew up in a fairly rural town in the South where men were supposed to be manly, I was surprisingly in touch with my emotional side long before that was a desirable thing for guys to be doing. Now, knowing that, which I would appreciate if you just sort of keep to yourself, knowing that, it should not be surprising to learn that after reading the poem on my brand new pocket calendar, I cried like a baby. I really did. Now, you might even ask at this point, what on God's green earth does any of this have to do with the scripture you just read? Well, I'm glad you asked, and I'm glad you asked it that way. What on God's green earth? Is that how I did that there? So since we somehow got on the topic of God's green earth, I'd like to share with one of my favorite quotes about creation, and I promise you this will all tie back in. It comes from Ellen DeGeneres, who once said, "In the beginning there was nothing, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. There was still nothing, but you could see it a whole lot better." Now imagine that makes everything just about as clear as mud at this point, but just stick with me for a minute. As funny as that quote is from Ellen, it points to how all of this ties together. You see, the older I get, the less appeal Footprints in the Sand has for me. I've gone from crying when I read it to feeling sad inside when I read it. It's as if the poem shines a light into the nothingness, and now I see it a lot better. Let me explain. In the story that we just read from Acts, the last thing Jesus says to the disciples before rising up from his earthly toil and going to heaven is, loosely translated, this. Look, God is going to give you gifts. Use them. Not just for anything, for something important. Go out there into this world, a world full of emptiness, and shine a light. And not just any light, the light of the love of God. My favorite line, actually, though, comes a few verses later. After Jesus rises up, and two men in white robes, presumably angels, come up to them, and they say, again, loosely translated, "What you looking at?" Now, the reason I love this line so much, probably in my top 10 of Bible verses, is its implication. Think about it. Jesus, the Messiah, the anointed one, worker of miracles, teacher of rabbis, just said at what at this point you have to assume was Jesus' last words on earth, basically saying, get out there and do something good for the love of God. What do the disciples do? Well, based on the question that the angels asked, they stand there in place and just stare up at the sky. I love that the angel of God then says to them, why are you standing here staring up at the sky? In other words, didn't you just hear what the anointed one said? Stop standing around and get out there and do something. That's just brilliant. Who would expect a sarcastic reprimand from an angel? And it's also why I'm getting a little bit tired of Footprints in the Sand. It's a lovely poem. But I have to say, I'm getting a little bit tired of what it slipped into representing. While I love the thought that I am never alone and that when I do not have the strength to carry on, I can lean on the love of God to raise me up and shine a light into my darkest hour, while it's a lovely thought, I'm just a bit tired of the way that Christians take it for granted and have let it define their entire lives. Once some of us believe that we have found God, we spend too many hours standing in place, staring up into heaven. It's as if the poem has shone a light into the emptiness of our devotion to God. It's a somewhat sound theological statement, and it's a mocking commentary all rolled up into one. It actually took, though, Spurgeon himself to rescue this poem for me, and his writings, if his writings are indeed the inspiration for this poem, and I am increasingly convinced that they are, then I think his perspective on why footprints matter are very helpful. His sermon I just read from later goes on to say, if he, Jesus, has been here, it is a desert island no longer. And his blessed foot once trod this, as his blessed feet once trod this wilderness way. For me, that is why footprints matter, and it is what we are called to do in this world. Jesus has lived this very life, this sometimes all too human life. And as Spurgeon puts it, Jesus walked out upon the lonely desert island where life can sometimes leave us wrecked. Jesus experienced what it meant to be frustrated and to struggle with his life and to recognize that God extends love to us even in our darkest hours, particularly in our darkest hours. That is the good news. That is the word that Jesus taught us to spread out to the ends of the earth. The Christian church, I am sad to say, all too often seems to be too busy staring up into heaven to be bothered with reaching out into the world. Like the poem, we are content to ride in the arms of Jesus rather than grow the gifts that God has given us so that we might walk our own paths in life and plant our feet firmly in the promises of God. So, that's why footprints in the sand no longer make me cry, but it does make me profoundly sad. I'm saddened almost to the point of depression, and with my background, I don't use that word lightly. I'm saddened that we have strayed so far from what God calls us to be witnesses to the love of God and to the ends of the earth. God calls us to rise up out of the stupor of our inward-turned churches and to shine a light into the hurting places in this world. But to do it, we have to stop standing around staring up into heaven and get on with growing our faith. So, there's this new poem, which is based loosely on the original. And in my opinion, it's much more apropos for the modern Christian. I honestly apologize if this ends up offending anyone. And at the same time, I have extra copies over here that I'll be glad to share. It's entitled, Butt Prints in the Sand. One night, I had a wondrous dream. One set of footprints there were seen. The footprints of my precious Lord, but mine were not along the shore. But then some stranger prints appeared. I asked the Lord, what have we here? These prints are large and round and neat, but my Lord, they're too big to be feet. My child, he said in somber tones, for miles I carried you alone. I challenged you to walk in faith, but you refused and made me wait. You disobeyed, you would not grow. The walk of faith you would not know. So I got tired. I got fed up. And there I dropped you on your butt. Because in life there comes a time when one must fight and one must climb, when one must rise and take the stand or leave your butt prints in the sand. There comes a time in life when one must rise and take a stand. I believe that point is now, not just for us, but for churches throughout the U.S. For far too many Christians, we have become complacent, satisfied with staring up into heaven. As he rose up into heaven, he asked us to follow his lead and to rise up in the midst of this lonely desert island where life can sometimes leave us wrecked. The good news is that we each have gifts to get on with the hard work of sharing love in the world. I see these kinds of gifts here at our church, gifts of welcoming and loving hearts, gifts of Sunday school teachers who inspire our spiritual journeys, gifts of fellowship when we gather together, gifts of music as Walt and our singers raise up their voices and inspire our spirits, gifts of leadership that we see with our session. I'm even willing to believe that at times God turns my sometimes feeble words into gifts of love. I have to say, for such a small piece of the ecclesiastical puzzle, we are certainly bounteously gifted. Let's not be the ones being asked, what you looking at? Let's be the ones who trust so fully in the power of love that we use our gifts in new and exciting ways for the sole purpose of sharing that love in this sometimes all too lonely desert island upon which far too many people's lives seem to be wrecked. Let us be the ones who don't ask God's love to carry us through this life, but rather be the ones who carry that love to those in need. Let us be the ones who recognize that if we really want to focus on God, it does not mean staring up into heaven, but rather looking out into this lonely desert island we call life and seeing God in the eyes of those in need. And when they ask us, what you looking at? Let our answer be, I'm looking at my brother. I'm looking at my sister. I'm looking at the future of the church. I'm looking at new ways to serve the one whom I love. I'm looking at new ways to serve all the children of God. When they ask us, what you looking at? Let us be able to say that I'm looking at three sets of footprints in the sand, those of my own, those of the world, and those of my God who loves us all. That is how we spread the love of God to the ends of the earth.